With me in the studio tonight is Denise Kiernan, who is the author of The Girls of Atomic City, which is a fascinating book. Welcome to Around Cincinnati.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Could you start off by reading the first two paragraphs of the introduction, which sets up the book's plot beautifully?
Sure. There have long been secrets buried deep in the southern Appalachians, covered in layers of shale and coal, lying beneath the ancient hills of the Cumberlands, and lurking in the shadow of the Smokies at the tail end of the mountainous spine that ripples down the East Coast. This land of the Cherokee gave way to treaties and settlers and land grants. Newcomers traversed the Cumberland Gap to establish small farms and big lives in a region where alternating ridges and valleys cradle newborn communities in the nooks and crannies of the earth, isolated, independent, hidden. In 1942, a new secret came to this part of the world. The earth trembled and shook and made way for an unprecedented alliance of military, industrial, and scientific forces, forces that combined to create the most powerful and controversial weapon known to mankind. This weapon released the power present in the great unseen of the time, unleashing the energy of the basic unit of matter known as the atom.
And the project that is mentioned throughout the book is the Manhattan Project.
It is the top secret World War II project that was designed to harness the power of fission, the splitting of the atom's nucleus, the project that resulted in the world's first nuclear weapons.
And the first short chapter begins in August 1945 after an event of monumental proportions.
Yes, it's a teaser for what comes at the end of the book. Absolutely. It refers, of course, to the first release of atomic bombs during warfare, an event that we revisit at the end of the book.
Beginning 2 years earlier, in August of 1943, you talk about the train to nowhere.
That was the train that one of the main characters of my book, Celia Klemski, took when she first arrived in Oak Ridge. She had been working on the Manhattan Project in New York City, though she didn't know that. She just thought she had a nice government secretarial job. And she was asked if she wanted to transfer and join the new headquarters that was going to be moving. And she said, well, sure, you know, where are we going? And they said, well, we can't get into too many details about that, but it's going to be down south. And she said, okay.
Then you talk about the fact that the government bought out all of these landowners in Tennessee, and many of them were displaced with very little money to move.
Well, the Manhattan Project had three main sites, though it touched many places in the United States. The three main sites were Los Alamos in New Mexico, which is what many of us think of when we think of the Manhattan Project, Hanford in Washington State, and Oak Ridge was actually the administrative headquarters for the entire project, and it was a purpose-built city, so it did not exist before late 1942. And in order to create it, they moved by eminent domain about 1,000 families off of their land. Many of these families had some of them as little as 2 weeks to vacate their premises, and then they broke ground and began creating the town that would become known as Oak Ridge.
What was the role of women who came to Oak Ridge?
Women fulfilled a wide variety of roles in Oak Ridge. Throughout World War II, whether or not we're talking about the Manhattan Project, women had expanding roles in the workforce. Even today, we hold up Rosie the Riveter as this emblem of what's possible in the world of work for women. And the truth was the same in Oak Ridge. Oak Ridge was a functioning town, so there were women in administrative posts and shops and cafeterias and transportation. But there were also thousands of young women working in these factories. These factories created specifically for the Manhattan Project.
They built dormitories and they had trailers.
People lived in a variety of settings. Oak Ridge was built very, very quickly. So the housing available was prefab and put together rather rapidly out of necessity. There were dormitories, there were trailers, there were 1, 2, and 3-bedroom houses if you were a part of a family and qualified for one. There were huts, which were the lowest level of residency, little 16-by-16-foot residences. There were things called flat tops that were exactly what they sound like, little boxy prefabs on stilts. But the population grew very, very quickly, so they had to be able to bring in housing as quickly as possible.
Let's talk about your research. How did you go about starting your research?
It was a combination of one-on-one interviews with people who had lived through this experience. I knew when I came across this story and decided to pursue it, I didn't want to do the book unless I was going to be able to actually interview people who had lived and worked in Oak Ridge during World War II. So a big part of it was doing original research and collecting the stories of people who were still alive today and lived through this experience. I also did an awful lot of research at the National Archives in Atlanta. The National Archives has various regional facilities throughout the country. And because Oak Ridge was the headquarters of the Manhattan Project, the majority of the Atomic Energy Commission files are all in Atlanta. So I went down to Atlanta a lot and plowed through some of their 5,000 boxes. I didn't get to all of them by any stretch of the imagination.
And most of the people you talk to, I imagine, are elderly at this point.
Yes, most of them are in their late 80s, also 90s. My oldest character, my oldest girl, so to speak, is Katie. She's 96 now. Celia's 94. I think my youngest is 88 or 89.
Secrecy inside the project was part of everyday life for these women. There was a lot of restrictions on them.
There were. Now, of course, we've all heard the phrase loose lips sink ships. So the concept of secrecy during World War II is not unusual. But that level of secrecy was taken to an extreme for the Manhattan Project because people didn't want the secret of what was being worked on to get out before the time was appropriate, according to the folks in charge. So in order to live and enter Oak Ridge, there were badge systems. You had badges that determined whether or not you were a resident. You had a separate badge that determined which facilities you could enter as a worker. These badges were checked at various checkpoints throughout the city. So, for example, if you worked in the Y-12 plant, you would have a badge that indicated that you couldn't even get on a bus that was going to the K-25 plant. And people would be there all the time to check to make sure everybody's badges were in order. There were also security background checks. If you were hired on, you had to wait for your security clearance. A lot of people's families got visits from the FBI. There were security briefings. There were pamphlets. There were billboards everywhere reminding you not to talk. There were also undercover civilian informants, just everyday folks that had been approached and asked if they would listen in on the conversations of the people that were around them at work or in the dorm or in the cafeteria. So, yes, security was extremely tight.
This is the South back in the 1940s. So segregation was part of everyday living?
Yes, Oak Ridge was completely segregated. One of the main characters of my book, Katie, was an African-American janitor who came up to work on the project with her husband. They came up from Alabama. And Katie allowed me to really explore the levels of segregation in Oak Ridge, which, you know, extended to housing and cafeterias, what jobs were available to you. Black husbands and wives were not permitted to live together. You couldn't bring your children with you. So it was definitely segregated. And I was very fortunate to be able to speak with Katie about that experience so that I could share that through her eyes.
Talk about tube alloy and the Manhattan Project's mission.
The mission of the Manhattan Project was to harness the power of fission, the energy that's released when the nucleus of an atom is split. And the three main sites, Los Alamos, Hanford, and Oak Ridge, were the center of this. Los Alamos is where the design and testing of the first atomic bombs took place. Hanford and Oak Ridge were designated as sites to produce fuel for these weapons. So Oak Ridge's mission was to produce fuel for the atomic bombs. Oak Ridge's mission was focused on the enrichment of uranium. And that's what Oak Ridge did. This entire town existed primarily for the enrichment of uranium, or the creation of fuel for the first atomic bombs. And that uranium was referred to as tube alloy or tubaloy or product, various names. You were not supposed to say uranium. Even if you knew what it was you were working with, there were a number of words and phrases that were not okay to talk about anymore and were censored. So people did not speak openly about uranium. They used code words.
Could you share some stories about a couple of your favorite women that you featured in the book?
Helen was one of the young women, young when she came. She was 18 when she was recruited. She was recruited out of a diner in Tennessee and promised a whopping 79 cents an hour. So she got on a bus and just took off for a town she wasn't given the name of. And what was interesting to me about Helen is that shortly after arriving in Oak Ridge, she was one of those people who was approached to spy on the folks around her. So it was interesting to kind of hear her talk about how that felt and what that meant and just kind of look at security from that angle as opposed to from the perspective of the people who were running the project. Colleen was another favorite character of mine. Colleen came to Oak Ridge with about 9 members of her immediate family. They all lived in a double trailer, very tiny, very cramped. Oak Ridge operated 24 hours a day. So what her and her family members did was make sure that they arranged their shifts so that somebody was always home to sleep when somebody was at work, so they could eat in shifts and sleep in shifts and take care of the younger children in shifts. So she offered a really, really interesting look at family life in the trailer camps in Oak Ridge. And all the women really provided interesting stories about the social aspect of life there, because there was a lot of recreation, too. There was an awful lot of work. Oak Ridge's operations went 24 hours a day, but there were also dances and libraries and sports teams. And the idea was that if people were going to work hard, they wanted them to be able to play hard as well.
What's been the reaction to your book?
I've been extremely fortunate that it has been a New York Times bestseller, Los Angeles Times bestseller, NPR bestseller, IndieBound bestseller. It was on Jeopardy the other night, which was very strange and surprising and wonderful. But what I like best of everything is that in Oak Ridge, a lot of the women who are in this book have their own book signings at the coffee shop. So people will come see them at the coffee shop, and the ladies who are featured in the book will sign copies for people who come visit.
Well, congratulations.
Thank you so much.
I've been speaking with Denise Kiernan, who is the author of the book, The Girls of Atomic City. You can find a link on our website, wvxu.org. For Around Cincinnati, I'm Lee Hay.